This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Stage 1, the Earth gets hotter and hotter due to growing greenhouse gas emissions. Stage 2, humans cool themselves artificially with machines. Stage 3, air conditioning makes the world even hotter until we run out of fossil fuels to run them or extinction takes us down. It's an obvious progression, another adaptation to what we've done. I counted air conditioning as a minor factor, another irritant to living systems. Now I've learned it's a major vector, a force that could help tip us into runaway climate change. Everyone knows air conditioners suck up lots of energy, most of it powered by coal. We've heard rumors a billion people in Asia are buying them. I've known for 20 years the refrigerants are super warming gases, but hey, these tiny amounts hiding in the back of our fridges and air conditioners, it can't amount to all that much. Wait until you hear the truth about air conditioning. We've got three powerful interviews. Stan Cox is the author of The Best Guide, a book called Losing Our Cool. His latest article in The Guardian newspaper gives us the global picture. Dr. Gus Velders is from the Netherlands Environmental Assessment Agency, and he advises world bodies on ozone depletion and climate change. We're lucky to have him as a guest. Dr. Michael Sivak from the University of Michigan wrote the best studies on the global growth of air conditioning. We'll hear from all three. Are we heading to air-conditioned hell? I'm Alex Smith. Tune into our guests this week and find out for yourself. Then we'll wrap up with a new song from the Dave Matthews Band, which captures our situation so well. It marks a turning in our programming from fear into action. Pardon me if I rage against the machine. In November 2010, Radio EcoShock interviewed Stan Cox, author of an excellent book on the overall impacts of air conditioning. It's titled Losing Our Cool. We mostly talked about the United States, how air conditioning has changed the way people interact and the huge amount of energy wasted. Stan's authority on air conditioning has gone global, just as air conditioning is exploding in the developing world, including China and India. His most recent article for Yale 360 was republished in Britain's Guardian newspaper. It's a scary read with a little-known twist that could help tip us even further into runaway climate change. Stan Cox is a senior scientist at a nonprofit agricultural research institute in Salina, Kansas. Stan, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Good to be back with you, Alex.
Well, this past June, Stan, I was in Page, Arizona, and it hasn't rained there for 2 years. The temperature was 104 degrees in the shade, 40 Celsius, and it was punishing. When people stopped for coffee, they left their vehicles running to keep them cool. The streets were deserted by 10 in the morning. It was just too hot. Everybody spends the day hiding in some air-conditioned building. So the last time we talked, I asked whether there might be a mass exodus of people from the American Southwest if electricity prices get too high, and now we're into a series of record hot years, the hottest July in American records. I'm still wondering, how long can the Sun Belt residents keep their cool? What do you think?
Well, the migration into Arizona, for example, which went on for more than half a century, finally did come to an end in 2008-9, and as far as I know, their population has either held steady or maybe even begun to decrease. Now, that had a lot to do with the big recession, not necessarily all to do with the heat, but you look at what they just went through here in recent weeks, and I'm wondering the same thing. How long can they keep it up? One place they probably won't be coming is Kansas, where we had 33 days or so over 100 Fahrenheit, and most of those were over 105 this summer. It was definitely not just across North America, but in Kansas in particular, it was the hottest summer ever.
Wow. Well, your article for Yale 360, I read it in The Guardian. It took us out of America and into a whole new world of air conditioning. Where is the big growth of air conditioning now, and can you toss some numbers at us?
Yes, right now, in recent years, the United States has been using about as much energy for air conditioning as the rest of the world put together, but that's changing very fast. It's predicted that China will surpass us in air conditioning use by 2020 or so. And you can think of it this way. The number of U.S. homes equipped with air conditioning rose from 64 million to 100 million between 1993 and 2009. So over 16 years, we added 36 million homes with air conditioning. In 2010 alone, there were 50 million air conditioning units sold in China. There's a boom going on similar to that in India as well. And China's expected to have 100 million air-conditioned vehicles by 2015. The city of Mumbai in India, one of the world's largest cities, now 40% of its electricity use overall is going to air conditioning. And it's still just a small part of the population who lives or works in air conditioning there. The people who've been making projections about the future say that 2020, 2025, probably China will reach the saturation point that the United States has reached, where our now 90% of homes are air conditioned in this country, and probably the other 10% may not ever need it. China is reaching that point in the coming decade or two, but then they say the big growth will be in India, Southeast Asia, and it'll be to the point that by 2050, the world could be using 10 times as much energy for air conditioning as is being used today worldwide.
So we take the total energy we're producing right now with all those climate change emissions, and we multiply it times 10 just to run the air conditioners by 2050?
Well, it's 10 times the amount of electricity we're using now to run air conditioning.
Okay.
We'll be running then, but that will be, at that point, that's half as much electricity as we use for everything right now. So it will be like adding 50% to the amount of air conditioning we use now. And that's just for buildings, not counting vehicles.
And as you know, Stan, the whole of northern India just suffered one of the world's biggest power blackouts. Electricity for 700 million people went off, sometimes for a few days, and a lot of that was due to demand for air conditioning. What can you tell us about India's love affair with cooling now?
Well, traditionally, and still, I think it's probably only 1 to 2% of households who have air conditioning. I lived in India in the 90s, and I've been going back there regularly since then. And where you really see the increase in air conditioning is in the big cities, in office and commercial space. And it's played a big role in the economic boom, but that boom has really benefited a pretty small portion of the Indian population. The people who have benefited from that are going for air conditioning in a big way. And the projections of the global economists say that there are going to be a lot more people in India in the future with enough money to air condition as well.
And you've found some other countries that we wouldn't suspect that are also growing in air conditioning use.
Well, yeah, some of them that maybe you would expect, like Saudi Arabia, is before long be burning more oil within the country than they export, believe it or not. And a lot of that could be attributed to air conditioning. Interestingly, the people who've made the projections about global increases in air conditioning are saying that Latin America may not really have big increases. I'm not exactly sure why that is, with the exception of Mexico. Mexico is already has a lot of air conditioning, and that's supposed to increase dramatically. But most of the increase they are projecting will be in Asia, and especially in the tropical countries of South and Southeast Asia.
And have you done any sort of back-of-the-envelope calculations about how much greenhouse gas emissions are coming from this global use of air conditioning even now?
You can kind of get some pulling numbers out of various scientific articles and surveys. My best guess is that worldwide, the current output of greenhouse gases, both from the power plants that run air conditioning and from the refrigerants that are circulating in the air conditioners and from the gasoline in the cars running air conditioning, if you put all that together, it's the equivalent of about a billion metric tons of carbon dioxide per year. And about half of that is the United States. Now that, as I said, is projected to go to maybe 10 billion tons in the future, and most of that will be elsewhere.
Yeah, I guess people don't realize as soon as you snap on your car air conditioner, and in fact, just having it there running all the time off the fan belt, so to speak, is costing you gas mileage.
Well, the federal agencies that study these things say that when you're running the air conditioning on high and kind of what their standard driving route of urban highway driving, a kind of a combination, when the air conditioning's on high, it increases your fuel consumption by over 20%. People always like to discuss the situation when you're on a long trip on the interstate, driving continuously at 70 miles an hour, because with the windows rolled up, you have less wind resistance. People say, well, running the air conditioning with the windows up is about the same as having the windows down without it. And that's probably true. Various people who've looked into it, including the Mythbusters on TV, when you average out all those investigations of this, it turns out to be a toss-up. But that's not a big part of how most of us drive day to day. So if you're in stop and go traffic, you're definitely burning a lot more fuel because of air conditioning. And the estimates for the United States are 7 to 10 billion gallons of gasoline per year to run our air conditioners.
If you've just tuned in, this is Radio EcoShock, and we're hoping to avoid going to air-conditioned hell here. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest is the author of Losing Our Cool, Stan Cox. Stan, people have suggested that global warming will reduce energy costs because we won't need to heat so many homes and businesses. Do you think that will work out?
Well, it will reduce energy consumption due to heating, but some of the same studies that have looked into global use have found that overall in the future with this huge increase in air conditioning, that over the next 20 years or so, the increase in cooling energy will cancel out the gains made by reducing heating energy. And then after that point, we're going to see a big increase in overall indoor climate control energy because cooling will be taking off further in this kind of vicious circle between global warming and air conditioning. And there's one important thing to remember. Overall, if you look at the Energy Department figures, say in the United States, we still burn, we consume a lot more BTUs of energy for heating than we do for cooling. Not a lot more, but more. But if you compute the greenhouse gas emissions, and you account for the fact that the cooling is being run largely by coal-fired power plants, whereas a lot of heating is natural gas and other things. And if you add in the impact of refrigerants and the impact of the gasoline burned to cool cars, then the emissions now from cooling are about the same as those from heating. And they're certainly, if we have more years like we've had in the past few years, and if it keeps getting warmer in both the winter and summer, cooling is going to start dominating our energy.
Well, Stan, let me read one paragraph from your article in the Guardian newspaper published on July 10th, 2012. And this kind of blew my mind. Quote, according to a recent forecast by Goos Velders of the Netherlands National Institute for Public Health and the Environment and his colleagues, refrigerants that accumulate in the atmosphere between now and 2050, increasingly HFCs, mostly from refrigeration and air conditioning, they will add another 14 to 27% to the increased warming caused by all human-generated carbon dioxide emissions, end quote. So we're not talking about all the greenhouse gases coming from generating electricity to power those billions of air conditioners, as frightening as that may be. No, this Dutch report is just about the refrigerants, those chemicals hiding in the back of all our refrigerators and air conditioners, adding another 25% to all our warming of the planet, maybe. Stan, how could that be?
Well, the refrigerants that make air conditioning and refrigeration work are an interesting bunch of compounds, and there's some confusion out there about it. We have replaced Freon and the CFCs that were the big ozone troublemakers and were breaking down our protective ozone layer. They've been replaced, though, with other compounds that, although they're ozone-friendly, they're very climate-unfriendly, as CFCs were. Some of them are thousands of times as have thousands of times the global warming impact of carbon dioxide, pound for pound. So there's a big effort in trying to do something to replace those with more climate-friendly compounds, and so far that isn't getting very far. The result is that currently in the United States, probably about 20% of the total climate impact of air conditioning is because of the refrigerants and the other 80% because of energy. With the huge increase in air conditioning and refrigeration worldwide, there's concern that this huge new production of refrigerants to circulate in those appliances is going to have, as you can add up, it's going to have a tremendous impact.
I guess some of that will be a few years down the line because it'll stay in, we hope, the refrigerator or the air conditioner for a while until it's recycled or it's broken down or thrown away and then it escapes into the atmosphere. Is that the way it works?
Right. And there are ways that those things are supposed to be captured and destroyed, but that's a very expensive process. And in the meantime, all of these appliances around the world that still have the refrigerants in them that are both climate and ozone unfriendly are aging. And so it's kind of a continuous pipeline of gases that are coming out. And then production of these refrigerants also can release important greenhouse gases. Elizabeth Rosenthal of the New York Times has been writing a series of articles this summer exposing the impact of refrigerants. And one of the stories she told here recently is about 19 companies around the world that are producing one of these ozone-friendly but very climate-unfriendly refrigerants. That refrigerant, the process of producing it produces a byproduct that's even more climate unfriendly. It's one of the worst chemicals known for the climate. So the UN and European carbon programs give companies carbon credits for destroying this byproduct. But the unintended consequence of that is because these companies get paid such a huge amount to destroy this nasty byproduct, they've actually been overproducing the somewhat less nasty end product so that they can get paid to destroy the byproduct. So a policy that was intended to reduce the climate impact of refrigerants has actually encouraged companies to overproduce climate unfriendly refrigerants.
It's actually a multi-billion dollar scam at this point, I'd say. Well, you know, Stan, what about the argument that we need air conditioning to save lives during extreme heat waves?
Well, I'm always careful to say that I don't believe in depriving people who need extra cooling in serious heat waves of that cooling as a health measure. But I think that the use of air conditioning as a public health tool in these extreme heat waves is a very different thing from the routine lavish use of air conditioning in the day-to-day world, even on just normally hot summer days, but especially the sort of habit that not just as individuals, but as a society that we're in of keeping buildings closed up, switching the thermostat from heating to cooling in April, switching it back in October, and never taking advantage of the outdoor environment and the natural cooling that doesn't cost anything and is better all around for people.
And when we pump hot air outside into the streets, doesn't that add to the heat island effect, making air conditioning seem more necessary?
That's right. It doesn't add to global warming, but you're right, it adds to local warming. There have been studies of this, for example, in southern Europe, where you have fairly tall buildings lining very narrow streets, and it's an arms race. Then the window air conditioners are pumping out hot air, and it's being trapped between the buildings, and so all of the air conditioners are having to work harder to get it out. I remember I was at a major hospital a couple of years ago, and they had a lot of features trying to make patients and their families more comfortable, and so they had a really nice courtyard out there that was a rest garden or something like that. But the outlets for the air conditioners were aimed right at the thing, so you know, sitting in that garden, you would just get blasted with hot air and probably undermining the health of the very people who were trying to have their health improved.
It's like sitting in front of a hairdryer or something. This is Alex Smith on Radio EcoShock with author Stan Cox. His book is called Losing Our Cool. Stan, I'm a little bit heartened to hear the Japanese Bankers Association has called for an end to wearing jackets and ties in their offices. They want to set the thermostat to 82 degrees inside since the shutdown of nuclear power slashed the available energy in Japan. That does show we could change some of these slightly crazy long-term habits, maybe even take off our ties. Once an energy shortage looms, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, that is probably the comment I've heard more than any other since the book came out. It comes from people who work in large offices who are saying, I'm sick of having to carry a sweater or a space heater to work in July, or I dread going into the grocery store because I'm freezing to death in there. And so that's the kind of low-hanging fruit there that we could use to reduce the overcooling. And then, as you say, by changing dress and work habits, be able to let the temperature warm up even more. There's what's called the adaptive model of comfort. And it says that we don't just have a fixed range of comfortable temperatures, but that depending on what we've experienced in previous days or weeks, our comfort range can expand and contract, and it can move up and down. They've found, for example, that office workers in Southeast Asia, when they exposed them to different temperatures and then compared workers who worked in air-conditioned spaces with those who didn't, the people who worked in normally and naturally ventilated spaces were perfectly happy up to temperatures well into the 80s, whereas the people who were sort of habituated to air conditioning were not comfortable there. But that requires changes in the way we dress and also changes in air movement. There needs to be ventilation, free ventilation through a space like that. Actually, an air-conditioned space that is, say, somewhere in the 80s, can be stifling sometimes, simply because there's no air movement. It feels very closed in, whereas at that same temperature or even warmer, if windows are open and fans are going, it can be extremely comfortable.
Well, I notice you're speaking all over and becoming the go-to guy for media on air conditioning. Are you planning to update your book, or is there another project you have going?
The paperback edition just came out, but it is unchanged from the original. I'm thinking that because so much more new information is coming out, like what was in the Yale 360 article. A lot of people publishing good studies that it would be a good idea to have an updated edition of it. The book that I'm working on now, or that I just finished and it's in the editing typesetting phase now, is also with the new press and is going to be titled Any Way You Slice It, about the past, present, and future of rationing. And that's another big subject, but the basic idea is that it's not just air conditioning, of course. It's a big example, but we're going to have decreases in our use of energy and other resources across the board. And nothing should be off the table, and that in fact, really the only fair way to do that is to have an overall ceiling on consumption of resources. And then once we've done that, to decide what is a fair share and to see that we all stay within our global share of resource consumption.
Why do I think we won't hear about that at the Republican National Convention? It's a tough idea.
The right talks a lot about rationing. If you listen to the climate deniers and so forth, rationing to them is the ultimate evil and something that looms in our future if we decide to be serious about the environment. And so, they may like me. They may think, well, this guy's at least being frank about it. But of course, they're all wrong in all of their assumptions about it.
And the last time that I remember a real good rationing system was during World War II, and for good reasons. The resources had to be steered in a certain direction to win the war. And I think that's what is coming up. We're kind of in a war for survival here with climate change and peak oil and a whole lot of other problems. From Salinas, Kansas, we've been talking with senior scientist and author Stan Cox. Stan, where can people keep up with what you're doing? Have you got a website for us?
LosingOurCool.com.
Good. LosingOurCool.com. Stan Cox, thank you so much for joining us again on Radio EcoShock.
Thank you, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith. Find out more, and you can download this interview from my blog at ecoshock.info. You are listening to Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. This week, we're looking at air conditioning. Are we heading into artificially cooled caves as the outdoor becomes unbearably hot? In some places, anyone who can has already abandoned the summer streets, traveling between air-conditioned rooms and air-conditioned cars. If the grid fails or electricity becomes too much to pay for, what then? Our next guest, Gus Velders, advises governments and the United Nations on both ozone depletion and climate change. Then we'll take a quick world snapshot from Dr. Michael Sivak. Of course, we could always listen to this guy. Maybe he's not high on 100 painkillers anymore, but Rush Limbaugh's brain takes him on some strange excursions. In this quick clip, he explains how air conditioning makes you think global warming is happening, even when it's not.
I have a theory about global warming and why people think it's real. Go back 30, 40 years when there was much less air conditioning in the country. When you didn't have air conditioning and you left the house, may in fact have gotten a little cooler out there, because sometimes houses become hot boxes. 30, 40 years later, all this air conditioning, and it's a huge difference when you go outside. When you go outside now, my golly, is it hot! Global warming!
Thanks, Rush. It feels hotter because we have air conditioning. Never mind all those temperature records shattered and measured by those newfangled thermometers or the melting poles. Who needs science when we've got you? Radio EcoShock will be right back.